Hello, Off the Ball football fans. Colm here. This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. I want to quickly talk to you about therapy. I wanted to take this time to say thank you to you, the Off the Ball listeners, for tuning in every day to Off the Ball Breakfast to listen to us talk about sport. You see, this month is all about gratitude. And along with the person I just shouted out, i.e. you, the Off the Ball community, there's another person we don't thank enough, and that's ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we are trying our best to make sense of everything, and in this crazy world, that isn't easy. Here's a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. So, if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is answer a quick questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. With almost 5,000 therapists available, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise. Visit betterhelp.com/OTB today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/OTB. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
I was almost surprised when Taylor's hand was raised at the end because you could feel Serrano coming on strong. Katie Taylor was a very much more of a clear winner.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Football Pod Club on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the GAA Senior Football, Ladies Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Check out hashtag the toughest for more.
Hello there, and you're very welcome along to another episode of the Football Pod Club. We're with James McCarthy last week, and this week we're with two Monaghan legends, Conor McManus and Rory Beggan. Boys, how are you both?
All good.
Good.
We've dragged Paddy Andrews and James O'Donoghue up the road here. How are you, lads?
Absolutely right. 10 hour journey.
The weather's been against
us. This is going to be episode of the century.
Come here, James has a history of long drives to Monaghan that don't go too well for him. What happened the last time you made the trip up to Monaghan?
Well, the two boys assisted for an unbelievable goal, but no, I was dropped for the championship match in
18
in Monaghan. Yeah, in 18.
Draw.
No, yeah, we got, we got a draw with Clifford's goal, yeah.
Put one in on top of Donner.
Yeah.
He put it in.
Should have stayed more.
Yeah, he had us that time. Mm. He had his bait. We just came back. Yeah. But yeah, that was a long drive up.
No, he kept pointing out spots in the way. He goes, this is where I was told I was dropped. This is where I cried.
He's in bad form, isn't he? Like,
yeah. But I had about 50 people coming up. And I obviously couldn't tell anyone I was dropped then.
Oh, family.
Yeah. Who was in a city? Clifford? Fair enough.
No, it was Donaghy.
Danny was your 40.
I know.
The writing was on the wall at that stage.
I know.
We might come back to that one a little later. We're in the gorgeous Conquer Wood. I have a feeling you boys have been here before. There's a beautiful kind of golf course here with the lake overlooking it. You were having a look earlier. We might have to come down again.
I'll have to come back. Yeah.
If you make it your business to come down nowadays, it's worth playing now. Summer's day is nice now.
Yeah, would you get out much?
A bit more this year than I would have done in the last few years now. But yeah, coming here, it's a treat, in fairness.
What sort of a golfer is he?
He's all right, he's hit and miss. He's a good scramble man now, he's come up with a couple of good shots now.
Never lose a ball, eh?
Good touch around the greens.
Safe.
A boomer and great around the greens, yeah. I think is fair. Yeah.
I think next season's Football Pod Club, we got to do a bit of that, you know? I think scramble, let Rory drive. Conor on the greens, you take over the putting.
Jimmy can do the scorecard.
I need to go back, cack-handed. Because that was undefeated.
You're beautiful. Yeah. There's something in there if you dig deep enough. Like.
It's that time of the year, lads, where it's winter, obviously, and there's a bit of a shortage of news in the GA front, and we're having Dublin lads retiring left, right and centre. Conor, there's an elephant in the room. We may as well just get it out of the way. You were written off in 2021. You were written off in 2022. There was photos of you at the end of the Dublin game in 23, and people were saying, this is the end of Conor McManus. End of 2024, I think you were a bit emotional in a couple of interviews, and there's probably questions there.
Yeah, well, that seems to be when you turn 30, them questions just appear.
Constantly.
Mm. Yeah.
So what's the crack?
I still don't really know. I sort of committed to doing a bit of rehab and a bit of strength work over the next 5 to 6 weeks, see how that goes. If I suppose it puts me in a position where I feel I can get through another year, I will. And if it doesn't, I'll probably leave it at that. So I suppose I'll have to make that decision sooner rather than later. I don't want to drag it on any longer than I need to, but I'd give it a chance over the... I didn't really do much until the club season was over there. Obviously, we lost the county final, so I'll sort of get into a block of that now for 5 or 6 weeks and see where that takes me.
What does your training week look like? Like, did you have you gone completely changed? Obviously, you're not doing every single night on the field.
No, no. Like, it's completely different to what it should be, really. That's probably the reason why you'd be thinking of pulling the pin. You just can't do what you need to do or should be doing to get through an inter-county season.
How often are you getting on the field in a week?
Well, to be fair, this year I got on it more than maybe I would have expected to, but it's not necessarily getting on it, it's what you do when you're on it. You know, you're stepping out of a lot of drills and not doing a lot of the tackling and that sort of stuff, but these new rules could...
You're happy enough with that.
I'm topping out of them there in my life, so... but yeah, no, it was heavily adapted, like, you know, you couldn't really do what you were supposed to do and do what you should be doing and do what you want to do, so it takes the enjoyment out of it a bit as well, you know.
Do you find, obviously, shooting is a critical part of your game, and obviously extra kick and free take and everything in your normal training week, you spend so much time, extra time probably doing that, and when you're carrying a knock,
you can't get the hours in.
Can't do the extra bits that you did you feel like that impact?
Well, even with the hip, like, I would have done less and less kicking practice the last number of years, like. For 10, 12 years, I would have been on the pitch before training, after training, kicking, practicing. But now, as soon as training was over, it was gone. Ice bath, get me, you know, ready for the next session.
Did you feel that impacted you on the pitch? It didn't look like anything. You had a chance. It was still
in
there.
Your own head, it probably did, you know, as much as anything else. You're probably leaning into muscle memory more than anything else over in the last couple of years, rather than the body of work that you'd done in the season or in the trainings up to that. So. Yeah, it has to come to an end at some stage, and I'll say
But like it's from the outside looking in, it's interesting watching players at this stage of career, sports people, like, you know, we were talking in the car about Federer and Nadal, like, clinging on for as long as they can, and you've often said how individual a decision it is.
Yeah,
it is a bit of an addiction though, isn't it? Like, because it's been your life, like, it's 18 seasons. Like, Jesus, Roy, you're there since 13. Like, he'd half an inch county career by the time, you know, you would come on board. Like, so is that a part of it? Like, well, football is so big in your life that you want to give it every chance?
Well, yeah, look, as you say, I've 18 seasons done, I'm 36, so it's half your life. It's half your, you don't really remember what life was before that, you know what I mean? So
it's not as good.
No matter what. What's it like after?
It's not as good.
But yeah, listen, there's an element of that, but you're also conscious, look, it moves on, look at it, and I suppose Gabriel and the boys are in now for a 3-year term. They're gonna have to put their own stamp on the team and their own stamp on Monaghan, you know, and the reality is Monaghan football will keep rolling regardless of who's there or what's there, you know. So we'll see what the next few weeks holds, and we'll take it from there.
But I know that there's a lot of people, they ask you a question, or are you retiring or whatever. I don't think people realise how hard it is to retire. Like, for people who still have so much to offer, it's every evening after training you're thinking, how did I do, how can I, you know, get better for the next game, or you're thinking about the game, you're recovering from the game. So much of your brain time is about football. And then just cut that off. Hey, it's some change.
There's you can be as prepared for it as you want. And I think GA players are probably, in terms of other sports, because we have careers outside of it, maybe in soccer and rugby, where that's their job as well as their passion. Like, but for us, even with a career or family outside of it, it's to play at this level, and we've all been fortunate enough to do it for so long, it is all-encompassing. And particularly for, or you're over a decade, Conor, 18 years, Jesus Christ, like, it is no matter how well prepared you are, it is an adaptation coming out.
Yeah, and that's it. You see, your whole, as you say, every decision you make, everything you do, everything, any social life, and everything revolves around that, you know, so that is a big...
It's easy to say no to, like...
Your automatic answer is no. No matter what you're asked to say or to go to, or no... Can't do that, or no, probably won't. Probably going to have training, probably going to have a match. Your automatic answer is no.
Like, it's being conditioned, isn't it? Like, as annoyed as you might be for the last three seasons about being asked, are you finished? And, you know, it probably happens a lot with players in their 30s. You made a massive decision last year to take a chance. I doubt kicking in the NFL was a dream of yours growing up, but It must have felt like a dream when you're in the middle of it.
Absolutely, yeah. It definitely wasn't a dream growing up. Wouldn't have watched too many games. But I knew of the field goals and all that there. And it had been mentioned to me by numerous people to try it out. But sure, that's what they're saying, try it out, but never actually give you a pathway to do it.
Yeah.
But then that obviously came to light in 23. And the end of 23, it was actually during the club season, I made that decision to go and try it up in Bangor Rugby Club. And I went up and there was a couple of big name GAA players there. I'm not going to say who they are. But I was up there and I tried it and done okay. Didn't think much was going to happen from that, but the more it went on.
Who was that first session with? Just Irish crowd or was there?
That was Tag Leader. Tag Leader got on to me on Instagram, I think it was, and just mentioned about the opportunity, just put a big spiel out and I just said, look, I'll try it. He says, give it a go. If you don't like it, at least you've tried it. And
he laid out a path, hadn't he? Like,
yeah,
kind of
there was a pathway at this stage, and with the pathway, with the international player pathway, with the programme that was put in place, that was with the roster spots now going up to an extra roster player, there was a bigger chance of more Irish getting into the league now with the kickers. So I kept trying at it, and decision was made in November to get on to the programme, and I said, yeah.
Did you, like, to step away, like, and you know, James McCarthy retired this week, 2 weeks ago, Brian Fenton retired, and everyone's like, he's 31, do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a big decision to step away and finish up, but to take a year out, to take a chance, was that a big thing, or were you able to look at it and say, coldly, I've given Monaghan this much of my life, I owe it to myself to give it a go here?
Like, Google the wages and... He
must have never looked at the money. All about sport.
He was actually even willing to go to Buffalo, so he was the coldest part of America.
How much is it again?
I'll go. So where were we there?
Just who are you?
I might actually try it again. Hey, you know?
Are you, like, personality-wise, are you making that decision yourself, or are you turning to home or friends or?
Yeah, I spoke to two or three close people, and
they all just said the money.
Yeah, it just goes. But when you hear of NFL, you just know. When you hear of American sports, you know that money's the big thing. It's professional sport. Money comes straight to people's minds. But
it's a life changer too, though. Like,
it is, yeah. And look, I'm not going to lie. Like, the money was a big part of it. It was setting yourself up for life. Like, I knew probably going over there, it might have been, if you had been successful, it might have been a 3 or 4 year stint. Set you up for life. Come back to Ireland. Do whatever you have to do then. But
do a podcast.
You'll probably just start a podcast like everybody in the country. But I'll become a professional golfer maybe or something. That's the way it was going to go. But the
work to do there too.
What's the, like, when you went over to the States, did you go over to a specific team or did you go over to, like, a communal event?
It was a program led by the International Player Pathway. James Kirk was the head of it. And it was all the IMG Academy in Florida was the base for 6 weeks. It was meant to be three. The combine was 3 weeks into it. We went to Indianapolis, done the combine, came back, and we were told that we need to stay on for another 3 weeks in case teams come looking at you. But no teams, out of them 3 weeks, no teams really came sniffing around. And I was going back to Ireland thinking, right, we'll give it to the draft, because that's when most teams are going to start thinking about kicking. And 12:01, the draft is over. I get a phone call from the Dubai. We had agents at that time. And the boy rang me and just said, here, the Carolina Panthers are really interested. And I goes, well, look, I need to know in the next couple of days. Like, I don't want this hanging on anymore. And he goes, yeah, well, look, they're going to fly you out. 2 days later, he rang me and said, look, they're going to fly you out for a rookie camp. Wow. And he's like, great. And I goes, when's that? And he goes, it's this date. And he's like, great. And I looked at the football calendar. It was the week before the Kerry game in the championship. And he's like, this is another shitty conversation I'm going to have with Vinny here. And
They're not easy.
But went up to him, just told him.
Snapchat.
But just told him, look, this was happening. Look, and I'm going over. I'll know after this where I'm sitting. And yeah, I got caught on the Saturday. I was out there and texted.
You were out at the camp.
I was out at the camp.
So they had really sized you up. Yeah. Like, they had really looked at you, and you, like, you know, we're all, I think, novices when it comes to NFL. A lot of people would have just got interested when the group you went over, and we would have seen the numbers that you were hitting and coldly looking at it. You performed well. Like, you delivered in the draft. Like, it was really impressive, but it got so close.
Yeah, it got so close, and it was such an eye-opener going out to an actual team this time, because we were in a facility that wasn't, it was just a wee drop of what you were going to get if you signed up with a team. But going out to Panthers, it was unbelievable. Their whole facility was all together, the stadium. They shared it with the MLS team. their training facilities always in a walking distance up the hotel that he was staying in. And it was just unbelievable. Like going into like breakfast, lunch, dinner, all laid out and like just a big canteen, Sky TVs everywhere, just anything on tap that you wanted. Then you had your auditorium for meetings. Then you had your whole locker room was probably the whole size of Conqueror, like from
same as Clonus, like
from one end of the home dressing room end to the away dressing room end. That was the locker room the whole way across.
Wow.
And your own wee booth and golf and simulator and all in it, and jeez, table tennis tables, loungers, all that there. Like it was, you just didn't want to leave. You're like, I could definitely get used to this. And then 2 hours later, you're being
doing. Do you feel like? And is it easier or harder now, you know, that you gave it a really good shot? Like, is it done for you? Would you give it another go?
I'd imagine it's done for me. I can't see it ever happening. The main thing that was told to me was your age and the development time and stuff like that, and that's the one thing you just can't do anything about.
Charlie Smith is 22. We see Jude McTamney's over there. He's 22 or 3 as well. So it's the age.
It's the age. Like, them boys are probably thinking these boys are cheap options. They're player pathways. We can don't have to count them as a roster spot. They're sitting in the international. And we can call upon them. Like Jude McTamney, like he was probably he was still the second choice kicker, but when the main man got injured, they still drafted in another way to kick, and he got injured, and that's where Jude came in. But they're thinking he's a cheap option. We can develop this, turn him into a weapon for us. That's cheap. And I think that's the way they look at it. But with me, I just think if that had took me in, I'm a cheap option, but like I'm old. I hate saying it, but you're old to them over there. Like,
do you feel like you would have enjoyed it? I know that the couple of weeks you got that insight into it, but going over there and hopefully all going well, you're there for 3-4 years. Is it something, the environment, I'd imagine it's a very, very different environment than playing with Scotstown or with Monaghan, and the kind of the home comforts. We see this a lot with the Aussie Rules, younger players who go over and can't like adapt socially to it. You've obviously a lot of experience, more mature, but the money is one thing. Do you feel you would have enjoyed it?
You would have enjoyed that side of it, and the kicker training day is a lot different. Having chatting to a kicker over there, he's telling me that they're like full-time golfers as well. Like
that sounds great.
It's just, like you're selling, keep selling it.
But, so what's their they can't kick that much because like I presume there's a higher risk of injury if you're just kicking off the ground every day.
They're in every day, but mostly half days when the team's training. Like the Panthers only had one pitch going at the time; they're developing two others. So we had to actually go out an hour before the whole team came out, and we got our training done. So we actually literally had to sit and watch the rest of the training. It was boring, but we had to sit and watch a stand-in for special teams walkthroughs. And then, back in, and that was really it. Every offensive and defensive had their meetings.
Yeah.
We had a 20-minute meeting with the kicking coach, and that was our day. I was back at the hotel, and the other boys had a load of other stuff to do.
Is it the exact same technique as a goal kick, like, or is it?
No, that's the thing I had to change. You're literally walking up to kick something. Like, if I'm going to kick that ball there now, it's not there when I'm walking to it.
Yeah.
Literally snapped and put down mid kick. So you're
relying on your man.
You're relying on man to hold it correctly. You're relying on the throw. You're relying on the snap. You're making sure everything's fast, that it doesn't get blocked down. Like I just seen highlights of a game the other day with Kansas. Like, their unbeaten run was coming to an end with a field goal, and they blocked it down. Like, and that boy who got blocked down is probably going to get potentially get cut. Now, like, you know, that's how ruthless it is. But that's what I had to adjust to, and obviously the weight of shoulder pads and the helmet.
Do you think there will impact when you've come back? So you're so intense and focused on that kick. Do you think it impacted you coming back, kicking in no-nails with Monaghan or with the club or anything?
Yeah, the first training session back is down in Johnson House, building up for the Cavan game. And I remember the first couple of kicks of that. All over the shop. Fitness was gone, there was no cardio done. I came back, I hit the weight on, no cardio done.
Eating chips and cheese.
Then he sent you back over, go back.
But like, that was the way it was. There was no cardio, you couldn't do cardio over there because you had to be fresh for your kicking and anything you're doing on legs. So all they wanted you to do was recovery, mobility and upper body. And then anytime I went to try and do it, because we didn't train much the weekends, I went and done a bit of running over at one of the pitches just to keep seeing and just to keep body going, because I didn't know what was going to happen. And coming back to kick, that was doing the goalie work was painful.
It is a massive change. Like if it had went well, like adapting to that, you're so used to, over a decade with Monaghan, we're playing Gaelic football since we're a baby, like, and training and all action, then going into such a controlled environment where you're only allowed to kick, you can't run, Like, golf is great the odd time, but I don't think any of us are good enough to enjoy it every day. It would have been such a drastic change, but...
Yeah. You got a glimpse.
Got a glimpse.
Cool. You gave it some crack.
Give it a good crack. I'm happy with how I've done. I'm lucky coming back into two very competitive teams. I feel I'm still in a good... hitting me sort of prime now, at my peak. And that's sort of with goalkeeping. Took a bit step back. I don't really try and count this year at the county because... I didn't get that, obviously, that pre-season and stuff, but it was a big change coming back, but the glimpse of it was, you were asking would I've enjoyed it. It's hard to know because it's a very different way of, like, the Irish mentality is that you put yourself back down a bit. Yeah. Up there, you literally have to brag about yourself. Like, and it's just not me. Like, you're just sort of saying, yeah, well, look, I can do better than this, and they're saying, no, go a different way about it.
Connor, you had probably a third of your intercounty career under your belt. It was probably the early Banty years and then McEnany. There was an All-Ireland quarterfinal against Kerry that I know that was your first year. And
The wing-back years.
And
best position in the pitch.
That's unbelievable now, yeah.
I'm not saying it all changed when Rory Beggan made his debut, but 2013 comes and it's Malachy O'Rourke. It's an Ulster final win, first in 25 years, and there was an unbelievable period there from there. So the man you're listening to there for the last couple of minutes, is that the same boy that walked into the dressing room around 13? 14.
Oh, he's definitely quieter now. You wouldn't have been sending him to America in 2013. he was definitely quieter. Took him a wee while to find his feet.
When did he come out of his shell?
Still in it a wee bit?
Yeah. Oh, he came out of his shell on the way to Dublin one night. We were, I think it was after winning the Division 3 League, I think it was.
Yeah.
Rory's first season in, quiet. We hadn't really much socialising done around at that stage. And on the way up the road, Rory announced that he was coming out of his shell.
On the bus?
It might have been day two.
To the whole bus.
Rory told the whole bus that he was coming out of his shell.
That was my first ever day two, I think. So you pardon me for my inexperience.
There's been a few since.
All the best stuff is day two,
I can imagine.
How were you wing back that time? Were you wing back at underage in ASH?
Not really, no. I was wing forward, wing back with Clontibret in my earlier sort of 05, 06. We won the championship in 06, I think it was. I was wing forward, between wing forward and wing back.
There were probably times where you could play a very attacking half forward.
Yeah, it was just go. You never bothered with defending that at all. Like, and came in under the Monaghan squad then for a couple of years and was bouncing between wing forward and wing back under Banty. Probably wasn't physically strong enough to play inside. You know, hadn't developed physically at that stage, so... It was only in the sort of 2009, 2010 that I started to drift in there and didn't really come out since, so.
There was a bit of chatter during the weekend about Brian Fenton not playing underage with Dublin. Did you not play underage with Monaghan?
No, I didn't play minors with Monaghan, no.
There's not many, like Monaghan, we know how small a population it is, a football mad county.
Yeah.
How the hell did you slip under the radar?
Yeah, well, it's not that I slipped under the radar. I was on the Monaghan squad, the minor squad in 2005, I think it was. That's the year we were minor. Yeah, 2005, and was on the squad and was dropped off it for the championship. So like that, went back in playing with the club, played as much football as I could.
We won the senior championship.
I was playing in the senior championship winning team the following year, and at the end of that year I was called into the senior team. So it can sort of change fairly quickly.
I think it's no harm either to miss out on an underage team or get beaten, because we took a record defeat against Cork in the 21s when they had a stacked team. Aidan Walsh,
Kieran Sheehan
was absolutely phenomenal. Coming in.
Yeah.
And then it's
you
like if
that,
anyone
you
thought
carry that around with you.
Like, you do. Like you if do, anyone yeah. thought they were getting ahead of themselves, yeah. we were embarrassed after that. Yeah. And it was like there was no, it was back to your club and work as hard as you can. Like,
yeah, I think. No, you carry that wee chip on your shoulder the whole time. And I heard Brian Fenton saying it. I think he'd done an interview about it before as well. Like you sort of carry that chip on your shoulder the whole time, even though maybe you've played 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years senior football, you still sort of carry it with you the whole way through.
You kind of need that edge though, don't you? You can't be like soft in that sense. Like you need something that will harden you or remind you know, to be on your toes like so.
Yeah, well I definitely use that anyway.
Did you?
Like everybody uses their own thing or finds their own crutch or whatever it is, but I would have definitely leaned into that. Like.
That was a Monaghan squad. I was a schooner man at the time, full of characters. You had the Freeman brothers, you had JP Moan, you had any amount that I had. Shane Duffy probably in goal.
Yeah,
that,
Shane Duffy
you know.
Was there, Rory Woods, Dick Clark and Owen Lennon.
There were always characters in Monaghan, but
Darren
that was
Quaid.
Like led by Banty at the time. Like that was like chest out in Croke Park, nearly getting over the line against Kerry once or twice.
Yeah.
But that was kind of where they got to, wasn't it?
Yeah, like my first year with Monaghan, like I started training with Monaghan in 06, 07. It was the National Leagues were Division 2A and 2B and 1A and 1B. Like, so like we played Leitrim in Leitrim, we played London in London. Like, we were at the bottom of the pile at that stage. Now we got promoted out of that. Meath beat us, I think, in the National League final. But I remember going over to London, play London.
Do you not beat Meath with the bottom?
No, that was 05. We went over to play London in Ruislip, you know, and you had the decision, you fly over the night before, play the game and go home, or fly over the morning of the game, stay over.
It's an easy decision.
Yeah.
Was that a player's call?
Either way, I think it might have been the management call, but anyway, it was a Sunday. We flew over Sunday morning, played the game in Ruislip, and out that night, but there was maybe five or six of us were under 21. Yeah. And we had an under 21 championship the following Saturday. Banty was over the under 21s as well. So told no, not allowed out, lads. And we sort of everybody just sort of drifted in different pods and different groups. And I went with some of the older boys. There was five or six of us. And then a couple of under 21s were sort of sipping at bottles and didn't know what to do and trying to slip in under the radar. And then we all congregated in some, I don't know where it was, in London anyway.
China White or something like that.
Up the stairs of some nightclub anyway, up the stairs we went, and just walking up the stairs, pretending not to be drinking, not doing anything. And there Banty was playing the air guitar on his knees on the floor of the nightclub, and all hell broke loose after that.
They're unbelievable. Even team building times, aren't they?
Mm. Yeah, you can't, that is the best form of team building is, you know, out after a match with the boys. Like, there's no, and you can try and sort of force it or replicate it by having nights away, or, you know, we're all going out on them. Yeah. It needs to flow.
But those days nearly gone, because it's week on week on week.
Yeah.
You're not getting the same, like, I don't know. It's a lot more than just a football team, isn't it? It's a pure, like, it has to be your entertainment, it has to be your family, it has to be everywhere.
Kind of, you've been playing in those games, remember? Banty was over and Pat had just taken over Dublin.
There's a couple of famous friendlies.
Yeah, it were kind of just teed up in advance. Both teams were in, like, you guys were trying to come up and take on Tyrone, Armagh were kind of probably finishing, but Tyrone had become the dominant team and you guys were trying to break that in Ulster. Dublin were the same, we kind of won a couple of Leinsters, but we were trying to get to the next level. And there was a big thing, obviously, with DCU. Like, a lot of young Dublin players were in college with a lot of the Monaghan guys in DCU. And Niall Moyne and Declan Brennan, who were Monaghan men, were running DCU as well. So it was just a kind of connection came along between Dublin and Monaghan. And both teams were trying to move up the levels. So for 2 or 3 years, we were playing each other in Division 1 and 2. But it's every year we played probably two or three challenge matches.
And were they actually...
What, in the same year?
Yeah.
So were they killing?
In, like, December or January. Yeah. And then probably two games between
the league
and championship, like April time, and you'd go up and it was just teed up in advance. Like, Banty and Pat would be like, right, like, Pat McEnany would ref.
Yeah. So he was there, and no whistle.
It was basically both teams were told.
So you weren't getting any bias threes or anything?
No, it was literally all in. You guys were told the same. Pat would come into us and go, right, this is, we needed to be tougher, was basically the thing Pat had decided. And they were absolutely fucking reckless.
Killing matches, yeah.
Like, Casey and Dick Clerk and Big Len.
Yeah.
Wheelo was still playing with Dublin at the time, and ball wasn't even thrown in. I was only a kid. We were the same age, like, coming in, putting the gloves on, going, what the fuck is going on? But it was like, for a couple of years, and the players would really laugh and go out to the pits, knowing this is what's coming.
This is what's happening, The ball would be shooting up one end of the field, and there'd be men lying just...
I think it was actually good for both. Mm. Both teams started to.
It doesn't sound like there's any bad blood between those squads either. Like, it was like you were all happy enough.
I think everyone
to roll
knew
what was happening. Like,
it was just this that was what the way it was. Like,
this is fair. Like, You are listening to the Football Pod Club with thanks to AIB, proud sponsors of the All Ireland Club Championships in football, hurling, camogie, and ladies football. Rory, you're in the midst of a club campaign with Scotland at the minute. You actually bet from Tibbert in the final. We're actually, given the nature of the year, chatting before your Kilcoo game. So when this goes out next week, say what you're going to say right now, because it's going to be pinned to the dressing room wall if you get the job done. But it's safe to say, and Conor, you would have been in this boat as well, you picked up maybe 6 titles with Clontibret in the last 15 years. You've won 9, I think, with Scotstown. You've been cracking on the door of an Ulster title. You've lost 2 after extra time to Guidoor and Cross McGlenn, sorry to stick it to you here, and then Glenn last year. There's no getting away from it. Like, it's a goal of the club in Scotstown to win an Ulster title.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive goal for us. The thing about maybe other club championships are different with us. People will look at the Roll of Honour over the last 10 years, whatever, and see Scotstown, Scotstown, maybe Clontibret, Ballybay. But they'll see Scotstown more than any other team and will think that this is, it's not a competitive championship. It's a very competitive championship. And in fairness, we do get well tested going into the Ulster club, but it is, and you'll test this as well, Conor, it is a massive, such a tough competition. Like, and because there have been teams at Glen, Slotneil, Kilcoo, have been dominant forces in that, and they'll continue to go and Cross. Yeah, and the one that probably stuck with us the most is the Guidoor one. It's the game where probably we went in favourite, heavy favourite, and to lose it after extra time was gut-wrenching. But every year there's some team that has just been too good, too hard to beat. And the year 15, 18, and last year, we felt we were ready to go the next step and win it, but have just not maybe either not performed or just not been there in the last 10 minutes and got over the line. But I love playing in it. Like, it's one of the best competitions I've ever played in terms of atmosphere, best teams playing each other. Yeah. The ground's hardened up a bit. It's all teams mostly at the same level, like, and it's class.
Yeah.
Do you feel, Rory, like, from the outside looking in, there's been, like you say, dominant Kilmacle, Crokes, Glen, Cara Finn obviously had probably a few years ago there on Castlehaven down in Munster. All those teams are gone now. It feels like
it's open.
It's even more so open than it previously would be, but it's the one championship as well where if you get a little bit ahead of yourself.
You're going to answer this now like a Dublin footballer in the Leinster Championship. He's only thinking of Ulster here.
But we are only thinking about that next game.
Genuinely, but you guys against Kilcoo is a massive game. You would feel if a team comes out of that, you've got a great chance. Is that in your heads at all, or your experience is just, we just have to get over this game on Saturday?
You just have to get over it, by hook or by crook, we just need to get over it, because so Kilcoo have been the standard bearers of this competition, like, you know, they've always been there, they're always competing. Glenn have probably got a foothold over the last few years, but Kilcoo have been the team, like, the most consistent team in the competition, and they have a good mix of everything, good footballers, real good attitude, real good work rate, so you may beat them in one aspect of the game, but they will take you down to a fight, and you have to respect, like, the team that won the All-Ireland, the team that has beat us in 16, there's a lot of the same players still there and are still showing it at this stage. So I'm looking forward to it, Saturday. Like I said, it's the battle, it's the big teams playing each other, and I can't wait. Armagh under lights Saturday night, that's the games you want to play in, like, and you can guarantee that it's going to be a 1-point swing either way, and whoever it is probably going to be favourites then going on to win either an Ulster club and All-Ireland, whatever it is. But it's the nature of that there, and there's two clubs on the other side of the draw, Argyll and Clanairn, who are probably rubbing their hands at any of these teams coming in. Like,
it honestly is a great championship and time of year. It's a funny time of year because you've so many county champions who end up ending the year as losers, and they probably have that sting in the tail. And like, you boys would have beaten each other in plenty of county finals over the years. I think there's three or four that you met in. He won an epic in the semi-final this year, I think, against with the Ballybay.
Yeah.
And then obviously fell short to Scotstown. They've been knocking on the door for a while. You've won. Did you win a 22 as well?
No.
Ballybay won 22. But you won 22.
We won 19 was the last time we won it, yeah.
So what are we looking at here with this Scotstown team who've been building towards this for a couple of years?
They're very dominant. Like, you know, they've been in 12 finals in a row. Like, so, you know, there's no getting away from it. That they're the dominant team in Monaghan this past 10, 15 years, you know. And there's no doubt they have the ability to win Ulster Club, you know, but as Rory says, it is a very, very difficult competition to win. We've knocked on the door of a couple of times, beat a couple of big teams, but there's always somebody else. There's always another team coming, you know. But like Rory says there, it is probably the most enjoyable competition you'll play in. It's just that time of year. You're going to training and you know that no other county no other club in the county is training. You're the only team that's still going.
Yeah. But the lights are still on in your pitch.
Binds the whole community together a wee bit more than any other competition, you know, and going, testing yourself against the best of Down or the best of Tyrone or the best of Donegal or whatever it is. It's a special competition. Now, there's no two ways about it.
You had lots of great days at Clontibret.
Some brilliant days.
Is it a very different team to the one that you won your kind of four or five in a cluster?
It's a completely different team now. We would have had a group of players there Clontibret won three minor championships in a row in 0-0, 0-1 and 0-2. That team won an Ulster minor club championship, and that team graduated then to win, you know, them championships as you talk about. So that group of players were together for quite a while. That group is pretty much dismantled now. It's a new team and it's a new group, and you're trying to...
You're still there.
You're all, yeah, yeah. And Desi's still there. Vinny's
still going.
Still floating about there too.
Good man, geez.
So,
man, Desi.
Yeah, them boys like have given an unbelievable service to the club, you know. But you're always trying to build towards your next championship. That's what you're looking at. That's what you're trying to do, is build towards winning your next championship. When that comes, you don't know. But that's the goal of every club. Like
clubs can fall into, you know, strong periods and maybe periods where the standards drop a bit. Like, the standards have been so high in both of your clubs over the last 15, 20 years. But Scotstown went through probably 20 years without championships as well. You know, you won so much in the 70s and early 90s. Is there ever a fear that this is all going to slip away, or do you feel like, you know, your clubs are in a strong position to kind of keep that going?
No, it can slip away at any time. Like, you see some of the clubs that have fallen by the wayside, some of the best clubs in Monaghan, some of the best clubs in the country. It can slip away at any time, and at the minute you take your eye off the ball, that's when trouble starts, you know. So you certainly can't take it for granted. You have to keep churning out players, you have to keep churning out teams, trying to develop players as much and as often as you can.
The biggest, the clubs that remain consistently successful over time, it's teams, clubs can get distracted with the senior team, and they get that. And the senior team are the figureheads of it, and when you go on a run and you're in county finals, you're in provincial championships, or what it used to be St. Patrick's Day, the momentum and the buzz is incredible. But if you drop standards in your underage system, those 2 or 3 years of success there go like that, when a group of players go, and it's very difficult. We had in our own club massive playing numbers, but if your underage suffers, you will pay for it down the road. So the best clubs and the most consistent ones that are there year on year on year, they're also the same clubs that have under 14, under 16 minor, all their teams, maybe not winning championships, but they're in Division 1, they're competitive all the time, and 3 or 4 of these guys are coming through year on year on year. And if you take your eye off the ball, you will pay the price. There's no secret sauce with it, really, you know?
Like, you're still raging against the light with Legion. I know it's upset.
He's only 28, like.
Yeah.
Look at him, baby face.
Benjamin Button.
A bit like Desi Moan here. It looks like he's in his early 20s. Well, like,
Desi, I'm so sorry with Desi over UL. We had a great night here. He pulled the plug on the Sigerson. I'd say we nearly won it.
Hold on a second now. You're I'm going to get a lot of letters from people who are in UL at the same time as you if you started this one.
You're not a Sigerson.
We were going to win the Sigerson.
This is 13-14, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is like footballer of the year era, yeah. James O'Donoghue. Mm. I'm not sure you played much college football.
I'm telling you, we had a great team. Oh, we won the league. Division 2 of the league or something. Sigerson was coming up.
Trench Cup you were in, I'd say.
All the...
Trench Cup.
Talking to a Dundalk man here. Oh. Yeah. Dundalk, right?
Dundalk, yeah. Lads, from... We're looking from the outside. Like, Monaghan's success over the last decade or so or more with Ulster titles and really competing at the top level, one of the best teams in the country. You two guys are probably, I would say, the two most influential players in that. And Conor, you were mentioning starting out, we were the same age, Monaghan, you're playing Leitrim, you're playing London. Could you foresee that Monaghan would go on and win those Ulster titles and join that top table? Was that always the plan under Banty, and then obviously Malachy comes in? Or when did you feel it changed?
Yeah, well, I'll say that, like, my first year we were playing Leitrim and, you know, London and that, but in the same year, we lost Ulster final to Tyrone by 2 points, and we lost to Kerry in the All-Ireland quarter final by a point. Yeah. So my first year was...
You felt it was starting already at that point.
That was my first year. So from the first year I went in, that's all I knew was this push, this drive to get there. You know, we had a poor Ulster championship in 08. We ended up get beat by Kerry in the last 12, I think it was, that year in 08. We had a poor 09 back in the Ulster final in 10. So we were pushing all the time. Then from 10 to 12, we had 2 very bad years where we went from Division 1 to Division 3. And then at that point, Malachy came in. And
those 2 years, was it naturally the end of that team with Banty, the players leave.
There was probably a bit of that, yeah. The likes of maybe Damien Freeman,
yeah.
Dermot McCardle, John Paul Mohan, them boys sort of
big
stepped away,
team,
you know,
yeah.
And I suppose the new men had to come, like let's say the likes of myself, Darren Hughes probably had to step up to be more players. Then at that stage, Colin Walsh came in, Kieran Duffy came in, Kieran Hughes came in, Fintan Kelsey, you had a new
nucleus,
you know, them boys came in. They were there for maybe 2010, 2011, and had a couple of years under the belt when Malachy came in. So he was bringing.
Good time,
he had a group where the likes of Paul Finlay, Dick Clerk, and Tommy Freeman, Owen Lennon were 29, 30, 31. Then you had the likes of myself and Darren Hughes were maybe 24, 25. Then you had Rory, Colin Walsh, Kieran Hughes, Fintan Kelly, Drew Wiley, Ryan Wiley. Then boys coming. So they made the mix.
You need the different generations.
Yeah,
though,
don't
you?
The
like
mix
you
was
too many
in
one.
It's a massive thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. I think you need the balance of the older
guys. And that's what I suppose Malachy inherited with us. We had fallen as far as we were going to fall. Like I don't foresee us having ever gone to Division 4 at that stage. So he was getting us, I suppose, at a perfect stage where the only way was up for us, and he just got us winning games. Even though it was Division 3, he just got a team.
How good a coach is he?
He's brilliant now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's the best manager I've played on the...
He's highly rated.
Why though? Like,
I don't know.
He's actually not... He doesn't do that much coaching in terms of being on the pitch, you know, in the middle of drills or that. He's always watching, and he'll pull you in the middle of sessions and that there, and he'll pick out things that he's not happy with or things that we can do better, and he's always involved in the team and tactical talks and that as the session goes on. But I suppose it's a royal testament to this as well as his man management skills as much as anything else. Like he's just, I suppose he gets to know the person first and foremost before he tries to drill into the footballer or the player, you know. So he gets to know people personally and has them on that level first, you know, the human side of it, and then he just gets the best out of you. He has you feeling like you can walk on water, like, and that's from every player, from 1 to 35. Like, you know, I often had conversations with different boys in the group or in the squad, like, and he's maybe dropping them for an Ulster final or something, and
they're delighted.
Coming away from the conversation,
thinking,
why didn't I think of this? Like, you know,
you definitely need both those people around. You need the manager who's going to oversee everything, make everyone feel like they're part of it. But I think the football coach is almost as important.
And he has that with Ryan Porter, like, as well. Like,
they've always been together.
You need those two characters.
Managers who do both. There are managers who
the longevity of those managers is probably less.
Did you have anyone like that?
Jim would have been very like that. Jim would do no drills, would leave it to the coaches, and like that, if he was being sound to you, you knew you were fucked. You were trapped, basically. It's like, geez, you're flying it there, and you're like, am I?
Am I really?
Geez, you're going really well. But
no need to bring the gear the next day.
The club have a match, do they? Go back and do a club game at the weekend. But then, like, with Pat with us, was very hands-on. That's what, like, there's no.
I don't think there's any right or wrong.
I agree with that. I think that's a better way to do it, to have trust your coaches and oversee things. I think he's an incredible appointment for what's going to happen with Tyrone. Mm-hmm. I think they're crying out for something like that. I think they have quality. And like I say, no more so with you guys talking about at the end of Banty's team, I think under Logan O'Doher, maybe that had come to probably the conclusion. So they'd be a dangerous team to watch. Like, but it was interesting because anyone you hear who has worked with Malachy, obviously with Glenn and with you guys, he's unbelievably highly thought of, you know.
That's your first experience is 13, right? I'm right with that.
Yeah.
So you're going into a team that's now Division 3, you're on the way up, you feel like you've hit the floor there. Where you get to win a first Ulster title in 25 years, that's a big deal in 2013. You beat the All-Ireland champions, Donegal, in that final, Jim McGuinness, Donegal in 13. You beat them well. Was it 13-7 or something?
13-7, yeah.
Yeah, like you were obviously so young.
It's easy.
Did you know how big a deal that was? Did you realise what you had done in 13 and what doors it opened for you over the next decade?
I didn't, but I probably didn't go through the heartache that a lot of these boys did, you know, with the Ulster finals that they'd lost. And stuff, like, it was just an unbelievable day for me, but it was, I'm sure it was just a massive relief for a lot of them boys. I was glad, like, I was never as glad to see Tommy Freeman getting his medal and like that.
He kicked the last point that day.
He kicked the last point. It was a great way probably to send him off. I know we went on to lose against Tyrone, but for him to get that medal and the likes of Paul Findlay and stuff, I think Paul was still about 15 for the second medal. But see them boys who went through, like them the boys I used to go with my father to games and watch, like, and then to go and win one of them on the pitch in 2013 was some feeling. But for me, it was just, you know, when you win your first trophy, it's unbelievable. For them to win that after the heartache, it was some feeling. Like.
Conor, it goes from 13 to a decade in Division 1 and All-Ireland semi-finals and having unbelievable standards in the group for so long. And I don't know if I'm going to phrase this the right way, like, but Monaghan have kind of become a phrase like, look at Monaghan, punching above their weight. But it kind of strikes me that ye as a group and the type of footballers ye are, do you think you hit your ceiling hitting an All-Ireland semi-final? Could ye have gone further than that?
100%, definitely. And that's probably the frustrating thing about it is, like, winning the first Ulster Champions was great because it was something that Monaghan had to do in order to push on and to get to Division 1 and do all them things. But when you've that done, your ambitions change, your mindset changes, you want more, and the only other thing that was missing was an All-Ireland. You know, we won the Ulster Championship again in 15. We were getting to All-Ireland quarterfinals, getting to All-Ireland semi-finals, and you were competing with these teams in the league all the time. You just had to go and do it in Croke Park. And I suppose the reality is the days in them All-Ireland semi-finals, we just didn't perform as well as we needed to, you know, and as well as that, I suppose, teams we were losing to, like Dublin in 14, best Dublin team that ever played the game. You know, were we ever going to beat that Dublin team at that time? Possibly not, but there was other chances there in 18.
Tyrone.
Now I know Tyrone beat us by a point, but again, you were going to be running into that Dublin team who were going for maybe four or five in a row at that stage. it was going to be difficult to win that.
21 was a chance for
2022.
You. 21. Was it 21 Tyrone beat you in the Ulster final?
Oh, 21 in the Ulster final,
yeah. That was a point as well.
Point as well. That was the COVID one.
Yeah.
And that was Tyrone caught Kerry in that semi-final. So that was another opportunity. And then obviously then Dublin in 2023.
Yeah.
What do you reckon your best team was from those years?
I want to go back to that in a second.
Yeah.
No, I want to go. I want to stop the clock 62 minutes into that Dublin game, but answer that question first.
I'd say probably that 2018 team.
Yeah. Really?
2018 team, yeah. Like we had a perfect mix at that stage. You know, we had good experience. We had a lot of our best players were in the peak of their powers at that stage. I'd say I would have loved to get a crack at Dublin in that All-Ireland final. You'd have been absolutely written off to the hilt for it, you know what I mean? But we had a good enough record against Dublin.
We played you so often because through Division 1 every year, and the games were always unbelievable games. Like,
did you relegate Dublin one year? Did you relegate Dublin?
I was gone by that time.
Brilliant.
Brilliant games in Croker. Like, unbelievable. Like, he bet us a couple of times. It was always 2 or 3 points.
Yeah.
It was, and it was funny. You list off the names of the lads. Like, it was such. Like, we knew the Manor team inside out. Like, it was the same players, the same battles. And he'd be on Mark and he'd be on Ryan or Drew
or Colin Walsh.
And he just built up a decade of battling against these guys. So there's no way if it got to an All-Ireland final, you guys would have feared us because it was like we played them all the time. And there was that familiarity with it. And the games were always brilliant. Like, you know,
yeah, they were.
We would play Tyrone a lot. Maybe you don't enjoy those games as much. But I think there was a big respect between both teams.
James McCarthy said something last week, and I wasn't sure who he was insulting with it, or if it was an insult at all. But he said,
most people.
Again, he said against Kerry, we had football matches, but we went to war with Mayo. And I think that was actually a compliment to Mayo. Like, what are you saying there about Mon? Like, I just want to dig into that. What are you saying there about Mon? Like,
I agree with what Conor's saying that. I thought for that period you were probably the best team in Ulster. Donegal had their initial period under Jim and won an All-Ireland. Tyrone had the Mickey Hart years where they were the dominant team, but you guys were the dominant team for that period. And if you win, if you're the dominant team in Ulster, you've got to set your sights on winning the All-Ireland.
You need to win All-Ireland, yeah.
100%.
What happened in 18?
Tyrone beat us by a point in
the semi-final. After the group.
No. Sort of group, yeah. We
Super 8.
We
played Galway at the other side.
We had beaten Kildare, we drew with Hughes, and then we went to Salt Hill and beat Galway in the last game of the group.
And Galway played us.
And he actually put Kerry out, didn't he, with that?
We were going well at that year. Like, we were playing well.
We actually beat
Tyrone in the first round of the championship in Omagh, and then got caught by Fermanagh in the semi final.
Is that the score? Is that the case?
Yeah,
that
was exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to stop there.
It was in the car first. Oh, no. So I was like, pull the trigger.
What was the word you used in the car?
About the kick?
Yeah.
Did I say best ever or something like that?
Disgusting.
Oh, disgusting.
Disgusting.
I love that shot. Like, everyone's like, oh, is it the right option? Yeah, it's kind of
madness. I've heard some people say, they were a goal up in injury time.
Nah, it was a beautiful
You don't kick a ball away unless you're sure it's been over the bar. You're a goal up.
You're back against the bench.
I'm just taking the ball.
Yeah. I love that.
I have a pop. Yeah.
I can only imagine the crowd on that side must have just been like, oh. Sensation.
You did give it a little Alan Shearer, right?
It was the first score I had from the game.
Kick that off, you've got to give it a bit.
Taking the stick you take down there in Omagh now, you have to let it out.
Was McNamee or McNamee?
McNamee, yeah.
You're leaving him out there, aren't you? Like, you know, you're not pressing him out there.
No, straight away.
We have my man out here.
That game against us in 18, we had a press on you. Like we said, we'd press up, and it was a warm day in your pants. And next thing you put it down and absolutely launched it over the whole press.
I actually got one of his kickouts in the first half, right out over the press. And I said, fuck, the thing's coming here. And I just ran out and got it. I was only 30 yards out. Like,
from the goalie up to the full forward.
Always to you and Morgan, like if we're... We would always try and press, but then you've got the boot. Like, it's so dangerous.
Such a weapon to go over and press.
Don't see Clonus on that sort of day. Like,
if you got a bit of breeze behind you as well. Like,
you had a bit of a breeze. I was... The first two or three kickers had come off, like they were like boomers to like a 45 or 50 to Colin Walsh maybe on the sideline. And I just knew after that, I'm on
it. Like, in your head, you're going, oh, I only had to give that
touches. Yeah, I only had to tap it because the air, everything like that was just with you.
The warm money is absolutely
bounces off the boot.
And I hit two or three big frees in the first half and just like, I'm on it. And then Kieran Donaghy just turned into the biggest sledge.
Turned into. That's what
it was. Wasn't bad first half. First half,
why didn't you do that from the start?
Second half, first free, I look up, there he is standing, waving the arms like this here.
Painful,
he shouting everything. Like, I don't even know what he was shouting, but just the Kerry action goes through.
Did you put subtitles on that thing?
Yeah. I think he's half from everything. Now maybe he's
There's not a bit of grips the second half in the press and stuff, but that was some game. The carnival atmosphere that day.
It's one of the only games I've ever watched back. I wouldn't watch any games back. It was actually during COVID, and it came up. I was on YouTube or something. Yeah. I just sat down and watched that. It was an outrageous game of football. Clifford, that was his
first year. From the tap down to finish, to hit the far corner with a bad leg.
Where were you for that?
I'd say Dark Hughes, both hogging the post.
It was a wreck. There's an unbelievable shot. A photographer must have been lying. I think it's a Monaghan photographer lying on the ground, or could be Sports File. And he gets it from where Clifford shoots from, and the angle that he squeezed it in at was ridiculous. Yeah. Like, just on the air and the ball, that you just know, you have that feeling that this is going to fly for me today. Just, you know, I'm not asking for an expose here, but is there ever a time where you're like, no, I want a different football? You know the way Brady used to... Is there a bit of that with a keeper, like when you're actually looking for... Could you have a little bag of balls there on your own that you're keeping for yourself for kickouts?
No, you're totally get out of the tee that quick. You just take the first ball.
Whatever's there.
There is. Like, I find the new one, these footballs or something about them. Like, they're not as...
No.
What they were.
They're not like the 2010 Jabalani anymore.
Just making excuses here now, but... I just find now balls were a lot easier to kick 10 years ago.
For yourself, with goalkeeping, you've become... Goalkeeping has changed, obviously, from 2013 when you started. And
it's going to change again.
Possibly, yeah, change again, but I'm not mad on goalkeepers coming out. I think there's a few players who actually add value to it. Niall Morgan, obviously, is one. You're another one, Ethan Rafferty, I think, before his injury, obviously. But I see lots of goalkeepers coming out and they do fuck all, to be honest. I don't think they're adding value to the attack, but you do. Was that a big change? How did that come about? Were you nervous doing it?
You were there the first.
Yeah.
I remember the exact day it started was against Kerry and in a scheme.
Yeah.
We were down 14 men.
It wasn't planned beforehand, no, it was just the evolution of the game.
Just the way it worked, it was a real wet, dirty day in Inniskeane.
Yeah.
And we were ahead.
Yeah,
Barry,
right.
Barry Kerr got sent off. Not say what he did, but Kerry also known for the high press, so I needed to get involved, and it just worked out that I was getting on so much ball that day, and I was carrying it out to 45, 50 yards and pitting kick passes into these boys, and it just sort of came on from that there. Now, Malachy wasn't the biggest encourager of it either. Like, he was, you know, let's get on it and stuff, but laid off and
yeah,
just maybe if we need you, but it just carried on from that. And,
do you enjoy it?
I do enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not enjoyable when you're doing a 100-metre sprint back to your goals.
On that, Nico, obviously we've seen more goalkeepers being caught. Obviously you see the Cavan game for you last year. Is that, I remember listening to Guardiola talking about this with his soccer teams. He was like, I think John Stones had another mistake and they conceded a goal, and he was like, I don't care about that. We expect a certain amount. This is the way we're going to play, and there will be the odd error, and I'm willing to accept that. For you in goal, is that, okay, I had loads of value going forward, there will be the odd time I might get caught. Is that...
Much. Like, there was the Inniskeane, there was another game in Inniskeane you got caught.
It's more chance that it will happen, for teams. But it seems to be the teams are accepting that risk, that there's loads of risk aversion and loads of other aspects of our play, but they're happy for goalkeepers to go out. Is that...
But I mean, the risk is probably gone now with three back, isn't it? Or if that comes in,
that's it,
the risk is going to be a lot less. It's only when everyone's
caught. The goalkeeper, in a sense, that... The risk is out. You're just going to send a boy back to goals and get your fastest man to get back closest to their free man, and we'll just daunt our own back with it and maybe drop in as a plus one. But as I said, I'd never do this play if I had a manager who didn't want me to do it. I won't do it. Like, I'd just stick to what I do. But Banty was a big encourager of it.
Yeah.
For me, like, he was the one who wanted me to do it a wee bit more and more. And that's where.
Well, you've got Andy Moran in, which he is the coach next year under Gabriel Bannigan. I can tell you, he'll be a fan of that. So he was talking about it on the football pod back in 21. He was calling this flagkeeper. He definitely was calling it.
But you will be coming up now taking shots.
But Connor,
he's going to outscore you now.
But he would leave retire.
I don't know.
But players wouldn't be standing for it. If he wasn't making an impact in play, like, he wouldn't. You know, you'd be saying, no, step back.
I think there's lots of keepers who go up who don't add value.
No, there are. But then there's keepers there.
It's a free overlap.
If you look at the last two, like, for all the talk there is about goalies coming out and everything else, the last two All-Ireland winners, neither goalies left their square at all. Cluxton never comes out.
Take it free for 45 minutes.
Liam Hughes never came off his lane at all either. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's some teams, like, we played Dublin in that semi-final in 2020, so you were heavily involved in the game, particularly in the first half going forward. Cluxton never once looked to get off the edge of his square at
Apart
all.
Apart from 2019... He marks Tommy Walsh late on in the game, and that one was that famous. You were down a player, exactly. Yeah, but he was able to do it at the time.
Last play.
Can I go back to the point where I wanted to stop the clock?
Do.
You kicked the equaliser, 62 minutes on the clock in Croke Park. Is it 12 apiece?
Just to...
Which game?
This is 2023 All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah.
So you've got the Dubs down the stretch where you want them. And if you look at that coldly, the final score is 117-13. So at that moment, 12 apiece, like... You're there, like, you have the chance. What is that going to haunt you? Like, what happened?
It just shows the quality of that Dublin team. It's purely down to that. Like, we have got Dublin exactly where we want them, 12 all. I think we were 12-10 down. We got it to 12 all. And this is where we had talked about all week, for 2 weeks going into the game. Get it down the stretch and we'll kick for home then. I think Brian Fenton just switches on at that stage.
Is that the point where he slides on his knees?
Slides on his knees, gets up, kicks it over the bar. And then Costello maybe 2 minutes later, kicks one from 35, 40 yards out. Darren Hughes is at full stretch to block him, sails over the bar. You know, so
it's so hard to kick for home, like, in that situation when it's like the noise and everything inside there for them is just, it's like a wave. It's like they know it's coming. Dublin know it's coming. You know it's coming. I think, and I always said it about Kerry, if we wanted to beat them, it had to be almost before the hour. You know, like,
take the lead, take the risks.
Early in the second half.
You need goals to beat Dublin, and we had two goal chances in the first half that day and didn't take anything away from either of them. Nesby had one, and maybe Sess had one where he was fouled, just coming through as well. we got 2 points from them attacks, but in order to beat Dublin, you need a rattle net. Like, and that was, yeah. I was into Hill 16 as well. We'd have got goals from that. You were set up well, but no, I think that just shows the quality that of the individuals that Dublin had. As much as the team at that stage, Brian Fenton just steps up and says, "Not today, lads." You know,
there was Fenton, but I just remember talking about it at the time, and I'd love to get your perspective on it. Conn and Mannion calling a merciful press, and it's one of the best presses I've ever seen. You find your man and you get it back, but like there's actually a slow-mo shot of Conn screaming at two more to leave their men and come up. Like, that was a moment as well, and Mannion kicks that free from a tight angle. That was the first point, I think.
Yeah, that was, I remember that. I remember getting the ball, I think it was Stephen Hanlon. I turn around and there's Conn and Paul Mannion just staring at me, and I'm like, right, back out to Stephen Hanlon. And I think he could judge.
He was unlucky.
He was pulled and dragged. We should actually have free out there, but I think he was given for off.
You're
the
not getting that down the stretch there.
No, that's exactly it. Like, and that was in,
Jesus Christ.
I was in the corner under the hill as well.
I was under the hill.
Who was ref?
Calder. Yeah.
Was that? No, it wasn't. It was Sean Horson.
From our perspective, well, it's pretty easy to get it down the stretch. We were always, particularly at 2023, that you look back now, it was probably the culmination of that team, that the experience built up there for over a decade of being in that. We didn't really lose tight matches. And the lessons learned, the two tight matches we did lose was that Mayo 21 semi-final and 22 against Kerry. But when that group, we were just so... Well, I wasn't even in this team, but I know... For the years leading up to that, if we were in a tight situation coming down the stretch, there was just total and utter clarity from every single player, from 1 to 28, whoever was going to be involved, what was expected and what needed to happen. And there was never a case, okay, if we're leading, we let you have it, and then we'll let the first kick get off to the corner, and then we'll press from there. And if we need to go after the game, like the Kerry match, it's all in. Everyone go up. And it was just that experience in that team. That's when you talk about experience being in that situation.
Was there usually calls for that? Was there calls, or was it just with repetition?
No, you just knew. Look at the body of, look at the name of Mannion and Conn. 10 years of being in that exact situation in the biggest games, semi-finals, finals, All-Irelands. It's like, go after this. So there's no, you can't hear that in a Croker, lads,
No.
It needs to be, if you're trying to think of calls at that point, it's too late. You just need to know, this is going to be tight. This is going to go down to the wire, and this is what we need to do. And that's it. That team, that's experience. That's what you're talking about.
It's almost impossible to get the call off anywhere at the noise.
You can't hear a thing, not a single thing.
So there's a decade of success, and I can only imagine the standards that would have been set playing Division 1 football for that time, because I'm a Mead man, and I know they've been lounging in purgatory of Division 2 for so much of that, and it has always felt like one of the things that's held a lot of them back. But ye got yourselves, became a Division 1 team, got to your All-Ireland semi-finals, and you got so close. Surely now, as the Dubs are dropping like flies, you're thinking, next year's the year. And a lot of teams will be
thinking that. There's probably 10 teams thinking like that at the minute.
Also, Armagh winning it, out of nowhere, is like, there's teams going, well, if they've done it.
Yeah. Like, I heard Darragh Craig from Roscommon during the week talking about, he had very close going on the AFL, and it was one of the driving things is that he doesn't think Roscommon are that far away from something like that. And the Connacht teams all do feel like that because they could beat each other every year. You've got that in Ulster as well.
Galway, Mayo going deep every year. So,
I'm always conscious that, like, I've got a Kerry man and a Dub beside me on the pod every week, right? So there's a history and there's a heritage in those counties. They've shared 70, 80 All-Irelands between them. So you're bred to believe you can win All-Irelands, like. Mm. Like, do Monaghan just need to get over an All-Ireland semi-final?
That's it, but you'll not win it if you're not in it. And that's the step that Monaghan have to take. They have to get to an All-Ireland final. And I suppose, as you say, Armagh doing it last year, it gives you belief, because we've, over a 10-year period, have been playing Armagh and beating Armagh regularly. They've been beating us as well. So But as I say, there's probably 8 or 10 teams looking at it at the minute, with all the retirements and men stepping away. Like, you've 4 or 5 teams in Ulster straight off the bat that are thinking they can all beat each other, they can all win an Ulster title. So if you can win an Ulster title, you can go on ahead and win an All-Ireland. Then you've obviously Kerry and Dublin. Yeah. Then you have the 3 or 4 teams in Connacht, 3 teams in Connacht as well. So it's as open as it's ever been.
So yeah. I know that obviously Armagh won it, but do you ever think that, especially with the new format, that it's stacked against the Ulster teams at times, like, where you see Dublin going through Leinster nearly unscathed, same with Kerry, they're coming in, they can time their training to be fresh or whatever. Do you ever think that you're taking absolute lumps out of each other above? And I mean, you're going into a group then, then into a quarterfinal, aren't it? Yeah. I mean, the path is so hard in Ulster.
Yeah, big time. If you look at even the draw this year, Derry play Donegal in the first game, the winners of that play Monaghan, the winners of that play, who's on the other side then?
It's stacked. It is stacked.
Yeah. So
I like that answer. He hasn't looked that far.
Four games to win an Ulster title. Then
he's in the zone.
Then you're into.
He actually hasn't done it. He hasn't looked that far. He doesn't care.
Google it as well. Yeah. There we are.
You don't even know who's in Division 2, do you? Mm. I bet you if I asked you now, you wouldn't be able to tell me.
I'd name you three teams.
They're all neighbours anyway. Right.
Hello, Off the Ball football fans. Colm here. This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. I want to quickly talk to you about therapy. I wanted to take this time to say thank you to you, the Off the Ball listeners, for tuning in every day to Off the Ball Breakfast to listen to us talk about sport. You see, this month is all about gratitude. And along with the person I just shouted out, i.e. you, the Off the Ball community, there's another person we don't thank enough, and that's ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we are trying our best to make sense of everything, and in this crazy world, that isn't easy. Here's a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. So, if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is answer a quick questionnaire to get matched with a therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. With almost 5,000 therapists available, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise. Visit betterhelp.com/OTB today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/OTB. Now, enjoy your podcast.
You are listening to the Football Pod Club with thanks to AIB, proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Club Championships in football, hurling, camogie and ladies football. Couple of quick fire questions, lads. You've been great with your time, and there's an orange warning down in Munster today, so I think myself and James are going to get on the road soon for that trip back home. He might stay tonight. Yeah. These are quick fire, and I'm sorry to spring this on you, Connor, but I'm digging out an article here from 2018, and I'm going to read from it. The Sports Chronicle. You penned this yourself. Oh. I don't fear for our game. It's off the back of that brilliant 2018 season. Obviously, there was probably a ghostwriter working with you if you can't remember the words here, so you can blame him if you want. Here's what I know.
This is deep.
No matter what rule is brought into Gaelic football, the best teams and cleverest tacticians are going to make it work to their advantage. Look at the longest-serving inter-county managers, Malachy O'Rourke, Jim Gavin, Mickey Hart. They are still around for a reason. The rules are there to be altered, but not as quick as the game evolves, and that's because of these managers and the people around them. You're essentially saying, stop tinkering with the game. Now, I find it interesting that two of the men you mentioned are now on the Football Review Committee. They're involved with bringing these new rules to Congress. This is going out on a Wednesday. On Sunday, we'll know exactly what rules are in play for 2025. Could be a totally different season. Are you still of the same mind that you were back in 2018 that leave the game alone?
I thought you said this was quickfire. Now. I don't even know what the question is. Yeah, well, I suppose things have changed even from 2018. It has probably become even more possession based and more defensive than even it was. I would argue that, you know, from 2012 to 2015, 16, 17, it was very defensive. At that stage, I felt it had actually turned a wee bit. There was a wee bit more of an emphasis on attack and play. But then the goalies got involved essentially, and it dimmed
game
the game. It became just not giving the ball.
Rory ruined Gaelic football.
Yeah, essentially.
I want to bring it back.
Full circle.
But I do think since that the goalies have become involved more in the game and has become far more possession based.
Yeah.
And like even watching Gaelic football now, every team's doing it. Every team's going back to the goalie. Every team's going side to side. 15 men are getting behind the ball. 15 men are trying to break them down. And if you go to any training session in Ireland, they're all doing the same fucking thing. Everybody's working on the same process, trying to break down 15 men, trying to move. So with that in mind, at that stage, I didn't foresee this coming. I didn't foresee Gaelic football becoming what it has.
So what would your message be to Congress this weekend?
I would say take in some of them. I don't know if we need all of them, but I definitely think...
Yeah. Do you like the two-point arc? The two of you will definitely like. What about the 3-3?
I think that's a good rule too. Yeah, I think the 3-3.
He wants the ball.
Fucking wonderful for him. He's going to play another 10.
Yeah. That way he's waiting 6 weeks to tell us if he's going to go in or not.
Sunday night.
Next thing, an announcement next Monday. Conor McManus is back for 2025.
Signed another 3-year term.
You are just waiting on the rules, aren't you? That's the truth.
But do you reckon that the 3-inside will actually be beneficial for the 3-inside, right? Or just free everyone else up around the middle?
The middle eight is going to be massive.
It is. But the amount of shots going out from around there is going to be massive. I don't know how much ball is going to be.
I think the big emphasis is if you're in that top three or playing up, you're gonna have to be fit to win your own ball. See, forwards could probably have existed there for
years
on looping and take coming late and things. You're gonna have to be fit to win the ball in front of your man. Now that's an essential. So you're gonna need pace.
That's the best skill in the game as a forward.
It's important.
Winning a kick pass in front of your man and either dishing it and coming again or being able to take him on. But if you can win that first ball for your team, I think it's much
important. You're getting your team up the field as much as
But it's, you're right, because if you're playing, you look the last 3 or 4 years, there's 13 guys back. That was a skill you didn't need.
No.
You could play inside and just go, I'm going to play on the arc here.
Yeah.
Runners are going to come through and they're going to be really cute.
Luke Legends.
Win a mark or come out and pop a mark in or something out there. So I think that the role of the 3-inside is totally different now than what forwards have been used to.
But it suits your game. That's why our friend Michael Murphy's gone back. It suits his game.
Michael wrote the rules.
Genius stuff from Murphy.
Smooth move.
But I think it had gotten so... when you're in it, you're not really thinking about this stuff because you're focused on playing. But we've been out kind of looking at it. It's a tough watch.
It is.
It's a tough watch. The games are just not... As a neutral, you're going, this is... No. Even the best teams playing against you.
Take the All-Ireland final last year, for example. There was 6-6 at half-time.
You're trying to be excited about it.
I think I was doing some with Andy Moore at the... The atmosphere before the All-Ireland final was unbelievable. Electric. You had two new teams, Armagh, the ball was thrown in, and it was just fever pitch. You couldn't hear yourself thinking. And then within 30 seconds, you think somebody just turned it off.
Probably 65 minutes.
Yeah,
really.
Because somebody turned the noise off and teams just went left to right.
And first possession of the game, 3 minutes long, and in the Footballer of the Year, Paul Connor says, feck this, and takes a shot over the bar from 45 metres. Mm-hmm. But that's what the game has become. I did say quickfire, right? It's obviously changing a lot for goalkeepers. Would you be happy with those rule changes if they were to come into play? Are you able to get with it? I heard a rumour from somebody at the Monaghan County semi-final that Rory Beggan is already playing the new rules. He said, you took a kick out, hit a man on the wing, and by the time he had got the ball and turned around, you were already past the halfway line. Is that true? Were you having the crack with that in a championship semi-final? You were?
Yeah, probably was. But I'm all in favour of the two rules that we just talked about there, the two-point arc and the 3v3. I'm massive in favour. I'm not in favour of the descent rule. I do think there needs to be something done with descent, but not a 50-yard taken up. 1v1 throw-in. Yeah, kick-outs. If the big arc's there, you may as well use it to that advantage and try and bring more
contests
into it. But it's a tough area to find a player. I think the days of the keeper drilling pinpoint kick-outs could be gone. I think it's going to see a lot more 50-50 contests, and what that leads to, I don't know. I think them first two rules definitely need to be brought in, because if you don't have the three up, there's going to be some way of finding this game being boring again, and we've wasted
time. It's gotten so bad, drastic changes have to happen. And so I think they will come in. And those changes will make, they're fundamentally different. There's a massive adaptation for teams. My markers are all of a sudden back in vogue. They've been gone for 5 years.
It's some energy if you're going back training now, and you're not going to have the same stuff you've been doing for half a decade.
You don't even know what the game is yet. Yeah. Teams have to actually get back into training and start playing games, in-house matches, drills and all that. Just get in and fucking play games and find out what works, what doesn't work,
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you come up with there.
From 2018, the best teams, the best coaches, the best players will work this out.
Now, I just find it interesting that two of the fellas you mentioned end up being on the committee that I come on. And that is, I just thought that was quite important. Now, we'll see what happens, but there's hope, I think, that if we give it a chance, give it a break.
A chance, coach.
I'm going to ask two of you a couple of quick ones now. I want to know your best quote that you've heard from a manager, because you've had a couple of cracking characters over the years, if there is one. And then the other one is, in the same article, you spoke about learning a couple of lessons playing wing back on Oisín McConville, but as a forward, who were the defenders? Like, we saw Christy McCaig retire this week, who was a brilliant man marker. Mick Fitzsimons is still in action for Coola, and you know, we were talking about that battle the other day. You win that ball out in front of him in Croke Park, and somehow he recovers to make a block on you, but you know, you opened him up in the second half and got a couple of great points. You had a good battle that day. Who would it have been for you? Rory, you haven't really been marked by anyone, have you?
No.
Donaghy in 18.
Yeah, Mick Fitzsimons would definitely be one of them. Neil McGee, I'd say, is definitely up there with the tough of them, because just any time you went out against him, you just knew you were
strength as well.
Physically, you had to be at it. You were going to be tested. The first time I marked him, it was the final, it was actually 2013, and you know, every trick in the book, he was at it. I didn't respond to it or didn't buy into it, and got to know Neil then after that with international rules and Ulster and things like that. So that for the remaining years, it was always a bit of crack. You know, you're always talking and bullshitting through it. So,
would Eamon ever pipe in when Neil was in? Was that?
Oh yeah, the two of them chirping away. Mark O'Shea, I played with Mark O'Shea down in Kerry in 2010. It was one of my first years in playing inside for Monaghan, and fuck, it was a lesson. Now, like, he could do it anyway. You know, he can be as nasty as he wanted to be. He went up the field and scored a point with his right foot. Went up the field in the second half, scored a point with his left foot.
Wow.
You know, he could do it all.
And could you take that from that? And use
it? I knew coming away from Kerry that day, Killarney, it was the last game of the league. Tomás O'Shea actually had a sabbatical and came back in, and he was fucking flying up the field that year. They were all Ireland champions. And I come away from that thinking, I need to improve here. Like,
what year was that? 2010?
2010.
That was when I started on the Kerry panel. Every night I was marking Mark O'Shea. It was horrific.
Yeah, no.
He was a step ahead of everything. Every angle the ball was coming in from, he knew where it was going to land at all times.
He was brilliant. He was brilliant. So, like, and as I say, I was my first or second year playing inside. I had a lot to learn. Yeah. I would have loved to get a crack at him when you were maybe at your peak to see where you would have been then. But he was definitely, you learn from that, coming away from that, you knew, Jesus, this is the level. These boys are all Ireland champions. This is the level that these boys are operating at. Like,
if you have a best quote, shout it. But the other quick one I had was, and you've had so many big moments that you've delivered on. What is the best feeling in a county game that you've experienced? Like, is it nailing a point? Is it clipping something? Is it a roar of a crowd in Clonus? Or is it up against an opposition player? Like, is there something that stands out to you? Like,
the one I always clip back to is 21 is the Brainwood Hill goal in 23. In Oma, like,
point down.
No, point down.
Fist it over.
A corner back coming up the pitch, like, you're thinking, I just seen the ball drop to the foot, and I was like, what are you doing? Going one against Niall Morgan, of all goalkeepers, coming in from an angle, and it just, once it hit the net, just the place erupted. Like, every motion possible was just in that minute, going up the pitch. And we were beat that day, and then just put the ball in the back of the net, and then there we are, trying, pulling everyone back to the line to stop them going for goal, and how it all just flipped. But
would you have told them, fist it over?
If Reinhard Hull, Reinhard Hull wouldn't have been known, but he had scored a point early on that game and came off to look with him.
He took it that early. Like, he could have actually
cut Morgan out.
He took it that early. He took it well outside the box. If he had even taken it in, Morgan would have been ready for it. He took it that soon, Morgan hadn't even a chance to.
What, I was pit side for your penalty shootout against Armagh. What was that like? You two. You were chatting afterwards.
Yeah,
that was an unbelievable atmosphere. Was that?
It was. That was a moment where you could actually, you know, in the middle of a game, you can't.
It's no time.
No, but you're actually stuck in the middle of this, and when you're not hitting your penalty, you're sort of fucking all eyes are on this here. You know, it was actually pretty good to be involved in a penalty shootout of that magnitude, and. Yeah, no, I enjoyed that. It was definitely, it probably, and I wasn't even going to say that, but now that you mention it, it probably was up there with one of the best moments, just purely because everything's on the line, and you can actually get a chance to sort of step back from it a wee bit when you're, even though you're stuck in the middle of it. Whenever the boys are up kicking their penalty, you're thinking, well, at least I have my job done. I don't fucking have to do it.
And then it comes back around.
You're up again, round two.
Geez,
torture.
It was good, yeah.
Okay. I'll leave it with you there. Anything else that you want to get off the chest? If there isn't a quote, we'll leave it at that. I know you don't have a man marker, but Stephen Cluxton is obviously somebody who would have had a massive influence on goalkeepers in general. For you, was he the standard bearer that you were looking at? I know when you first came in, you had the boomer and then you developed. But as a goalkeeper, was that there for you?
Yeah, he was the one that you always watched and seen what he'd done. He'd obviously tucked that in. No teams had ever pressed for it before, and so he was the one picking teams apart, and he'd started it. And then the thing with Stephen Cluxton was, I'd probably get Dublin fans will hate me for this now, but I think there's a lot better goalkeepers now who can do a lot better things than Stephen Cluxton. One thing that separates him from everybody now is his mentality. I think, like, teams, he probably lost all that because teams are just too scared of him now. And we're just allowing Dublin, you've probably got kicked out for about 4 years in a row there.
Yeah.
The fear factor
of it all. And you sort of lost that, what Stephen Clough can bring to the game. But when he had the stand up, like, he came up in the All-Ireland final there 2 years ago.
23 was his, I honestly think that's, I played him for my whole career, he's over 20 years. His performance, and James said this the other day, in 23 in the final was
freakish.
Incredible. Because Kerry were coming after you. Kicked the freeze. He hadn't kicked freeze.
Hadn't kicked freeze in 10 years. Ridiculous.
Know, he kicked the first
kick.
He was coming up with the crutch to take the first free, and they're going, this could go horribly wrong, and he nails it. But every kick out,
100%.
Carrier coming after 100%, was incredible.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, the people mentality. Probably writing them off a bit. His mentality in the big moments, like, that's what separates the best from the rest. Is his mentality in them clutch moments, and obviously the one that everyone remembers is 2011. But let's go back to kick out. It's the kick outs in the last couple of minutes when you need them. He was the one pinging them, and they weren't just wee chips that he'd do.
Even that day in 2023 in the semi final against us, like, we had him well pressed several times, like, and he still finds men just out of nowhere.
But you know, Brian Howard.
He found him so many times.
But it was like, he doesn't hesitate.
No.
John, the way you know this, because teams are coming out, we would have went after you loads of times. You take half a second. And you're all over it then. But it was like the risk, and you have milliseconds to say, I'm going to go for that kick or not. And every time he just go, bang.
Yeah. And we went up that, like, I stayed on his left-hand side because I was the area he clipped. He never hit one that side. Like, he pinged them to everyone over the side. Then he was getting one to the edge of the D, and one went over the sideline that day. Mm. That was it. We couldn't press him.
Hours, nights, weeks, months of years of preparation.
Yeah.
There's no secret sauce. Like.
Yeah. Rory Began, Conor McManus, thanks a million for joining us on the Football Club. Conor McManus, best of luck in the next 6 weeks. I hope that rehab goes well. We'd love to be having the same conversation with you next year. You're saying, are you going? Rory Began, best of luck with the Ulster Club Championship campaign with Scotstown. Hopefully this goes out next week. It's another day out for Scotstown. Thanks to Conchra Wood for taking us here, and we'll have to come back for a game of golf again, and to AIB for bringing us on the road with the Football Pod Club. James O'Donoghue and Paddy Andrews, we've had Armagh's All-Ireland and duo, Conor Turbin and Nathan Forker, we've had James McCarthy, we've had Conor and Rory. We've got one more to come later on. We're going to have a Christmas party after it as well. So thanks to AIB and thanks for tuning in. That is this week's episode of the Football Pod Club. See you, lads. Thank you.
Thanks, boys.
Cheers. All right, lads.